Hi, good afternoon everyone. Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com, Law Office of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. Today is Thursday, March 18th, 2010. We are doing a community conference call, which is a courtesy service for the community. This call is being recorded, so anybody who does not wish their voice to be recorded should hang up now. Keep your identities confidential when you ask a question or have a comment, because these calls are public, so you may want to keep this in mind. By participating in this call, we don't agree to be our lawyers and you don't agree to be our clients. Like I said, it's a courtesy call. Let me get started with the questions we do have. We are going to go over the questions that have been posted on the forums. If there is time remaining, we will deal with new questions, but first we will deal with questions that have been posted, then any comments or follow-up questions on the questions that have been posted, and finally for the new questions. First question I have today is switching jobs from LJX83. Hi, I'm currently on OPT F1, OPT expires. This person wants to know, what is a good time for somebody who is on OPT right now, optional practical training on an F1, to change jobs? Is it because they're concerned about the H1 quota? Is it after the H1 is filed or is it after the H1 is approved? Well, here is how it works. You are exempt from the H1 quota only when the H1 is approved. Okay? So, conduct yourself accordingly. If you leave before the H1 is approved, you are not yet exempt from the quota. But of course, we don't know how long the quota is going to last. Last year, it lasted a long time, several months after April. So, we don't know how it's going to be this year. It looks like it should last a long time because, remember, there are a lot many more H1 denials than there were last year. Also, economy has not improved much, so we may not see a huge amount of H1 filing. You could be reasonably safe changing jobs anytime, but if you want to be 100% secure from the quota issue, wait until your H1 is approved. Okay? So once it's approved and you receive the approval notice, you are then exempt from the H1 quota. Okay? Next question is, SAI for green card. Their issue is that they have a three-year degree. They have a three-year degree, and the way the labor certification was drafted, it said field of study, let me see, master's, major field of study, computer science, engineering. If there's an alternate field of study that's acceptable, yes. Specify the major, mathematics, business, etc. Is there any alternate combination? Yes. So bachelor's plus 5 years. Okay. Now, you have a three-year bachelor's degree and a postgraduate diploma which was never evaluated. So, the question is, getting a new education evaluation, including this postgraduate diploma, does it help me? Yes. If the diploma is such that it can be combined with the degree, you may be able to win this case under EB2. But I do not believe you can win this case under EB3 because the language of the labor certification does not provide for an EB3 option. Normally, when we have three-year degrees, we plan to fail. In other words, if we are going to fail, we at least make sure we will have a chance under EB3. But in this labor certification, I don't see that. Okay? You want us to do a formal consultation, go ahead and contact our office for that. But judging by what you have described, I don't think I would have much else to add. So, you know, in many ways, I would say don't waste your money. But at the same time, if you feel like you want me to spend some time on it, I can go over your paperwork and see if there is any option here. I don't see it from what you have described. And it looks like you've described everything that needs to be described. Okay? Good luck. Next is Shiva GP. Okay. My sixth year of H-1B expires in June 2011. Form was filed August 2009. Firm is not approved yet. I want to change my employer. They will start in September 2010, but my sixth-year visa expires in June 2011. Am I eligible for seventh-year extension from new employer? Well, you can get seventh-year extension only either if the old employer does not withdraw your labor certification or upon the one-year anniversary, which is September 2011, of your second employer's labor certification pending. So from June 2011 to September 2011, your only option would be to recapture time that you spent outside USA. Okay? Other than that, I can see no other option. So either the old employer does not withdraw the labor cert, based upon which you could get extension even for the period covering you from June 2011 to September 2011. In September 2011, the way it should work out is because second employer's labor cert would have been pending 1 year, you should be able to get H-1 extensions based upon that. That's how it looks like to me right now. Okay. Next question, Fruity Bar. Got my labor approved. Lawyer says I must wait until India's priority date becomes current. He does not know how long. He said that he would apply for my I-140 now, but I-45 could take up to 2 years. The answer is yes, the lawyer is correct. They can apply for the I-140 now, but 485 cannot be applied till the priority date becomes current. And nobody can really predict that, 2, 3, 4, whatever number of years it takes. Next question, Stoned. My wife received a notice of intent to deny in September 2009. We mailed all the papers back in October. We haven't heard back. Only reason I have not inquired about my case yet is because I also filed for EAD, and I don't want to take any risk. Is this the right approach? I am not quite sure. What was the notice of intent to deny based upon? How does that affect your case? Your question seems to relate to your case, so I'm not quite sure what you're asking me. Let me review it one more time. Wife received a notice of intent to deny in September 2009. We mailed documents back. We haven't heard from them. Except my profile changed to January 2010, but our info remains the same. I don't know, sir, what you're asking me. I'm not at all sure. But generally speaking, how long it takes for them to respond after an NOID is impossible to predict. Okay, if you're on the phone, you can clarify your questions. I am completely confused. Next question, Witshine. I have the following question regarding the change of status. So this is, I'm currently on H4. I plan to take a master's degree program, and I'll be moving to F1. Husband applies for I-140. Well, one of the things he can do is he doesn't have to name you in the I-140. Okay? Because if you try to convert to F1 after your I-140 has been named, you've been named in the I-140, it might be more complicated. So F1 can be rejected in those cases. Okay? So yes, you could apply for F1 before the I-140 filing, or they could not name you in the I-140. It is not required by law as far as I know. Number two, will there be any replication on my husband's green card processing? No. Your being on F1 has no effect on him. Number three, what happens if I'm on F1 or PT during I-45 stage? Can I be included as a dependent in the 45 application? Very complicated. Because USCIS has clearly said, and they've never quite discussed it in detail, but they've clearly said, if you want to be on F1, you cannot simultaneously be on 485. Unlike H1 and H4, where you can have 485 and H1 and H4 both at the same time, F1, according to USCIS, does not permit you to file a 485 and yet remain on the F1. So if somebody is on F1 and their 485 is filed, what happens? Do they automatically lose F1? Nobody knows the answer to that question. But it's best to assume that's the way it works. Question number four, lastly, as a part of master's program, if I get a monetary prize, I think there is a ruling. You may want to talk to your international students office. I think there's a ruling from USCIS that permits you to take nominal prizes as a result of competitions, even on F1 visa. So you may want to talk to your international students office about that. And if they say, no, it's not okay, then what you do is you don't take the money at all. Don't donate it. Just don't take it at all. Because if you take the money and then donate it, the money has physically come in your hand. So you've already broken status if it's not allowed. I think it's allowed for nominal amounts, but double check with your international students office. Next question, Dumas 9, naturalization. They had an employer-based green card. They stayed with the same employer for 2 years, 4 months after getting the green card. Then November 2004 through Jan 2010, based in India with 2-3 annual trips. I don't think you are going to be able to get your citizenship. Because if you have moved your home to India, they are not going to permit you. Okay? to file a naturalization application. It looks like, you know, typically they look at where your job is. They could very well ask you for that. As far as filling out the forms are concerned, I'm sorry, we cannot assist in that. If you ask me how a particular form needs to be filled out, I will not be able to help you in that. Okay? And I don't think you can file for citizenship at all because you're not even domiciled in U.S. Okay? So, in my view, this is going to be a very, very difficult application. And you have to be careful. If you say something on the naturalization application that is not true, and USCIS takes issue with that, they can bar you. Not only can they take your green card, they can bar you from entering USA forever. Misrepresentation in the immigration proceeding is a very serious problem. Okay, so be careful with this. Zozo000. Rajiv, currently on part-time H-1, the same employer who has sponsored my green card, part-time H-1 expired May 2010. Can I go for extension of my part-time H-1? Look, my problem is, if an employer has sponsored you for green card, the representation they have made to USCIS is that they have a full-time job for you. So if that is the case, why are you currently working on a part-time job? Technically, your answer could be, well, my future job is going to be full-time, and I'll take that when I get my green card. But USCIS could ask for more questions on this. Okay? Technically, there is nothing wrong with extending a part-time H-1. But I'm looking at the practical implications which could become important over a period of time. So keep that in mind. Next question, SP_0929, consular processing and visitor visa. He or she wants to know, parents want to come visit, they've got a 10-year visitor visa. If there's a green card process, like I-130 going on, can they still enter? And the answer is that's up to CBP. If at the airport CBP determines that they don't want them to answer, they can create a problem. They don't want to allow them to enter, they can create a problem. Whenever you have a green card going, a visitor visa could become a rocky boat in which to travel to USA. It's impossible to say how CBP will react. Okay? Better option is either let them visit and go back and then apply for their green card, so within a year or so they've got their green card. Or if they are here, at least they don't have any preconceived intention of applying for a green card, but while they are here, after a few months, you decide to apply for their green card, you can do that. Apply for their green card and then apply for advance parole for them so they can travel back to India and come back or wherever, whichever country they are from, as many times as they like. Okay, those are the two options that I see. Apply for green card and stay outside, or apply for green card while in USA and take advance parole to travel back to home country. Next question is from Bonzer. Bonzer wants to know, a pending I-140, can it be a problem for a fiancé's K-1? And the answer is no. No. I don't see why that should be a problem at all. Next question, zero gravity. USCIS's parents for consular processing, huh? Okay, I'm not sure what that means. Let's see. My father's I-130 is approved. IR-5, and the case is currently with NVC. Father has visited USA 3 times, 10-year visitor visa. On his third visit, he filed for a change of status. Oh, yeah, I remember this case. So I filed for a religious visa, but that was not granted. His stay in the U.S. after his I-94 expired while the COS was pending was a period of authorized stay. Yes. Typically, if somebody is in USA, let's say on a tourist visa, and they apply for a change of status as well as a new visa status, then during the time that the petition for change of status is pending, they are not out of status or illegally present or unlawfully present in USA. Okay? So that should not be a problem. If the period of being unlawfully present, which it doesn't appear to be here at all, is less than 180 days, we should have no problem. To me, it appears that we are not going to have problems. Can the U.S. consulate deny him an immigrant visa? I don't see how. If he made no representation, never stayed unlawfully present in USA for more than 180 days, how can they stop him? Can a U.S. attorney represent someone who's outside the country? Yes, we do it all the time. How does it work? Will representation help in our case? Look, I personally feel it'll be a waste of money. As long as you're telling the truth and presenting the case truthfully, Go ahead. I think this case should go through smoothly. If there is a problem, then you can always contact us. How can we help with the CP case? Well, we can make sure that the law is followed, the consulate is not breaking the law, and they do that more often than you think. A lot of times they have a misunderstanding of the law themselves. Okay? So yes, we can help if necessary, but I don't think you need to hire us at this point of time. I believe it is a little bit of an overkill. Of course, if you want peace of mind and you feel like, oh, no, I want somebody else to step in and take over, we'll be happy to do that. Frankly, I don't think it's necessary at this time. If there's a problem, hire us. Next question, KRM ANID. I'm not sure what that means, but it's from Money. Money says H1 to F1 with I-140 approved. I think it's a follow-up question from before. Consultant advised me to withdraw my I-140 before applying for F1. Absolutely bad advice. Absolutely, absolutely awful advice. Why? If you look at the form I-539, the question is, has anybody ever applied for an immigrant visa for you? Ever. It's not, withdrawing is not going to help you much. In my opinion, it's a bad idea. But then, you know, people could differ in their opinions. Steve Lynn, Steve, I'm not sure if you have sent me an email. You are the same person who sent me an email about our firm representing for EB-5 cases. I think you did, about a real estate investment, etc. The reason I never responded back, because some of the issues that you raised that were important to you, our firm will not be able to meet them for you. However, let me answer these questions for you. Some of these questions are not capable of answer because they depend upon USCIS. What you need to do is file a Freedom of Information Act request if you want and see what kind of information you can get from USCIS. So let me deal with it one by one. Does USCIS allow the public to see how many I-526 and I-829 applications were approved from each EB-5 regional center? I don't think so, but if you want, you can do a Freedom of Information Act request. Does USCIS allow public to see how many complaints or lawsuits have been filed against each EB-5 regional center? Look, lawsuits, USCIS will not keep track of. That's the question of local courts. So you can run a search through courts. Get yourself a litigating lawyer, somebody who does litigation. They can run a search through Westlaw or any of these online services and see if there are any cases pending or decided against the regional centers. Complaints, USCIS may have a record of that. You can go ahead and file a Freedom of Information Act request. Does USCIS allow the public to see when each EB-5 regional center has been approved and when each investment project was approved? Investment project. That they might, and I think they should. So again, you can file, all of this is subject to a Freedom of Information Act request. And the forms for FOIA are on USCIS.gov website. Okay? So yeah, that you should file a FOIA request for each one of these issues. Next question, Nisha 111. She wants to come on L1B, and she's also going for an H1. Will there be a problem if I go back to India, come to USA through a new L1B stamping from another company? Can I use the approved H1B from the company B to switch jobs? No. If you enter on L1, you are back on L1. If you want to switch back to H1, you have to leave USA, get an H1B visa stamp, and come back, or you have to apply for a change of status to H1B. Okay? My husband is on L1B. Is there any problem if I switch to L2? And later, can I use approval for H1 to join the job? You can. You can theoretically use the H1 at any time. But here's my problem. INS does not like it when an employer keeps the H1 in abeyance for a long time. Because they can say, look, if there's a real job, then who is doing it? Why are you waiting so long for the employee to join? So technically, yeah, it's possible to go on to an H1 any time during its life. But as a practical matter, unless you have a good explanation, you will have a problem. Next question, Cruz_Pats. Normally, sir, we don't advise people on filling out forms, but this is a generic enough question, and I can answer it like this. Normally, and again, I can only tell you normally, speeding ticket citations, unless they are for reckless driving, are not considered to be a crime. They are mainly a traffic violation. Okay? So, but if you have any doubts, in general, I always like to err on the side of caution. You have any doubt, go ahead and reveal it. Let the consulate or USCIS decide what they want to do with the information. Normally, traffic violations are not considered to be an offense or a crime. There are certain questions in certain forms where everything is covered, including moving violations, etc. It depends upon the language of the question also. But traffic offenses, purely traffic offenses, are not considered to be crimes. Okay? I'm actually zipping through these questions pretty fast today, which is a good thing. We might have a lot more time than I had anticipated. So I'll go on. Posting for a friend, this is from Kwasta, says, I'm an H-1B for Company A. My wife entered into USA on H-4. After some time, we filed for H-1, which got approved. She never worked on H-1. One of the most important things that you have not mentioned is, did she or did she not get a change of status? You need to read my blog. We have a lot of information and discussion on what happens in these cases. Technically, if somebody gets a change of status, which means they got a new I-94 saying H-1, they are now on H-1, not on H-4. And if they are not on H-1 and they never joined the company, they are out of status. So when they are out of status, they have to go outside USA, get an H-4 visa stamp, and come back. Okay. Four questions. What is the process involved in change from H-1 to H-4 for her? If she's out of status, go outside USA, get a visa stamp. Can she file an H-4 while she is in USA? No. If she's out of status, no. If she can file H-4, will it be Company A or Company B? I don't understand that question. Because H-4 is not dependent upon the H-1 holder's company. Four, once approved, can she continue to stay in USA or have to go outside country within 90 days? That all depends upon change of status. If she never obtained a change of status, merely an H-1 determination, then she's still on H-4. There's no problem. Next question, Sejla 00, I've been in the U.S. since 2003 on F-1 visa. I have an associate's degree and then a bachelor's degree. I have also been working full-time, filing income taxes. My I-20 was terminated by my school since I graduated early. What options do I have? H-1 is the best option if you want to work here. In my mind, that's the best option. You want to look at B visa option also, but that doesn't permit you to work. And it's a very chancy option anyway. Also, make sure you are not being subject to unlawful presence in USA. That could become a really bad issue. So take care of that as well. Help Me 2009. I got my green card in November 2004. I did my high school and undergrad school in USA. During this time, I worked part-time, full-time also. I joined postgraduate studies in a foreign university as a full-time student. You were kind enough to take my question. Oh, I guess you have talked with me before. Okay. I submitted my N-400 application. I was fingerprinted. Now I have an interview scheduled this month. I want your advice with the following. I had only one trip of about 4 weeks earlier in the last 6 years, back in 2006. Now I've had 3 trips in 7 months for about 3 months total. Okay. You see, it's very important for the government to understand what your reason for being outside USA is. Normally, trips less than 6 months at one time do not need to be explained. But if you have actually moved abroad, that could become a real issue for you. Okay? So I'm not sure how you would deal with it, but deal with it truthfully. Tell the truth, whatever they ask you. I'm not sure how it would work out for you. I think it should be okay. If I were you, I would have probably waited to study abroad until I actually got my citizenship. So, give it a shot. It's worth trying. Let's see how it works out. Next question, Nuance 2K5. My cousin was a U.S. citizen, married a physician on a J-1 visa. Sir, one thing you've got to remember, if the physician has a home residency requirement, which most physicians do, then even marrying a U.S. citizen does not get rid of it. They've got to get a waiver of the J-1 home residency requirement. If they don't, they have only two options. Get a waiver through something like hardship, which is very unlikely, very difficult, or go outside to your home country where they came from, country of last residence, and spend 2 years there before coming back to USA on a green card. Only two options, okay? Next question, Philly USCIS, citizenship case pending since Jan 2009, and you have already tried through your congressman's office. Lawsuit is definitely an option, but I would say keep trying through the congressman's office. You can even approach the ombudsman's office and see if they can help you. Next question, Sri Valair. I'm a U.S. citizen, want to process green card for parents currently in India. What is the best and fastest way to process? Apply for them while they are still there. I have answered this question earlier for somebody else. Apply for them while they are still in India. Maybe within a year, year and a half, they should be here on a green card. You can file I-130 and 45 together if they are in USA, but not if they are in India. Okay? Can they travel while the I-130 is pending? No. But if they were here and you decided to file for their green card, you could get them advance parole to travel. I've answered this question before for somebody else today. So if you listen to the conference, I think third or fourth or fifth question was something to do with this. Deepak says, I have recently come over for a work assignment on H-1. My mom and spouse are there in my home country. What visa can I get for them? It's a very interesting question. I'll tell you why it is interesting. Spouse is simple. She comes on H-4. But what about mom? She doesn't technically qualify for an H-4 because only minor children and spouse can qualify for H-4. There's a little known visa, a B-2 visa, available for those dependents who don't qualify for an H-4. It may be possible for mom to come and stay with you indefinitely while you're on H-1 on a continuing B-2 or B visa. We've done it a number of times for other people. Talk with your lawyers. It is possible to do that as long as you can show that you are the only person that she, you know, you are the one who she relies primarily on for care and you want her to be here. So that may be possible. So wife will come on H-4 and mother could come on a B visa and the B visa can be extended as long as you are here on H-1. Technically, it should be extended on a yearly basis, but INS so far has been doing it on 6 monthly basis only. Okay? I am done with all questions. That was excellent. Only half hour it took me. I will open the floor for questions. Give me a second while I set this up. Folks, anyone has any question, press *6 to talk with me.
Hey, Rajiv.
Yes, sir.
Hi. This is question number 22.
Okay, what is the question?
I want to file, green card for my parents, and they are currently in India. They have a visa, though.
Right.
But what is the fastest way? I mean, they can be here and then apply, or they can be there and apply.
See, I don't think there is a lot of difference in the timing. I think times probably are about the same, both if they are here or in India. Okay?
So, if they're there, if I just file 130, can they come here while it is in process?
I have already answered that question, and the answer is it depends upon the CBP. When they land at the airport, if this question comes up that you have a green card going, they can be declined an entry. Normally, CBP should not be so mean to the parents of a U.S. citizen, but they have the right to do so if they wish. So it's a toss of a coin, which I would not want my parents to expect.
I see. Okay.
Okay. So I would make up my mind. Either have them here and then apply for a green card. And the weird thing there is, they should not have a preconceived intention of applying for a green card when they enter USA. If they change their mind after being here for a few months, it's perfectly okay. But INS could conceivably raise an objection if you had a preconceived intention of applying for a green card and used a tourist visa for them to enter USA.
Oh, I see. So don't apply as soon as they come here or something, right?
Yes,
something
don't have a preconceived intention. If you change your mind
after a few months, after a few months, if I apply, can they still travel back? Because
you would then apply for their advance parole.
Okay.
Okay. As a part of the I-130-45 filing, you'll apply for their advance parole, which is given in a few months, and then they have unlimited permission to travel to and from USA while the case is pending.
I see. So can they be applied along with 130?
Let me correct myself on one count. Not while the case is pending, during the life of the during the life of the I-131, during the life of the advanced parole.
Oh, I see. Okay. So, but I-130 and advanced parole, can they be applied at the same time?
I-130, 485 and advanced parole. Advanced parole is a part of the 485 process.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You can apply for everything altogether.
Oh, I see. I have written, there is a note on your forums actually somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't wish to, if you want to have the flexibility of either consular processing or 485, so just make a note on a red, you know, with a red ink saying, you know, will not be doing adjustment of status on the I-130.
Mm-hmm.
If I do that, so I won't be able to apply for advanced parole, right?
Why would you want to do that?
No, I mean, just for the timing purpose, basically, if that is faster, one is faster than
no, other. No, no, no. I don't know if that is really a smart idea. Keeping in mind what you are thinking, I think choosing one or the other option is better.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want for them to apply while they are in India, then all you have to do is there is a check mark in the box itself which says whether or not they're going to apply for, in the form itself, whether or not they're going to apply for adjustment of status. If they are not, then it just goes directly to the consulate automatically.
I see. Okay.
Okay.
One other, last question. Is there any advantage on applying in Texas or California?
I don't think you have a choice in this, sir. As far as I know, I haven't filed a form in a long, long time. Other members of the team take care of those that stuff. But typically, it goes by the place of residence. It is not a matter of choice.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So read the instructions on the U.S. form. I don't even know where these forms are filed anymore. I haven't, like I said, I don't do the filings myself.
Okay.
I take care of the law part. But if you look at the instructions on the form, they'll tell you exactly what you need to do. And I don't think you'll have a choice.
I see. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good afternoon, Rajiv. This is this is immigration.
Yes, sir.
Actually, I need to know that I applied EB3 I-140, that is previous labor permission, and I got approved. And right now, I am on EAD for the last 3 years.
Okay.
Then after that, recently around a couple of years back, I applied EB2. And I got approved.
Okay.
I applied I-140.
Okay.
I got approved, but unfortunately, the porting is not done.
You mean the date has not been ported? Sir?
Priority date.
The priority date has not been posted. Ported.
Yes.
Did you request the porting?
No, that's what. So when I spoke to my employer and they already sent the letter and it is already ported, that's what they told me.
Yeah, normally, you know what they are doing these days? For the past several months, what USCIS has been doing, this is a very good practice, and I'm very glad to see that, you know, every now and then they do some things that make sense. What they do is, they actually automatically scan the earliest available I-140 date for you and they port it automatically.
Okay.
But if you want to be doubly sure, just go through their customer service and see if their date has been ported.
I know, but as a employee, if I'm going to call them, I don't think they are going to...
No, have your supervisor on the phone with you.
No, he is not.
No, have your supervisor. If they are not going to assist you, then it could be a problem. But it doesn't hurt checking.
I don't know whether because if I'm going to check myself, I don't know whether they can answer my question or not because that is the employer property. So, and one more question is, recently I got an opportunity to join a different employer and they said that they can do the AC-21.
Okay.
But my question is, can I go and work them for them?
With AC-21?
Yes, it's 21, yes.
Okay, let me get a grasp of your situation. You've got an I-140 approved and 485 pending for more than 180 days.
Yes.
Another employer is offering you a similar job.
Similar job, and the previous employer, he applied already the EB2 cases also. That's what I explained to you earlier.
No, I got that part. But
the
next job that is being offered is similar to the EB2 job.
Yes.
Okay. Now question is, can I do an AC-21 portability?
Yes.
And the answer is, of course, that's what AC21 portability is for. But make sure you talk with your lawyers, get a consultation, make sure the jobs are similar.
Okay. And if I'm going to get the job description similar, if I'm going to give the case to you, can you handle this one?
Sir, we do hundreds of AC21s every year.
No, I understand. It's just I need to understand from your point also.
No problem at all. Just send me an email if you want. You can send it through the contact us form.
Okay, contact us.
If you go to immigration.com homepage, at the top is contact us form.
Uh-huh.
Just send me an email through there.
Okay.
Okay, just so, Rajiv, we need to do an AC21 portability. And typically what we do is we charge for comparing the two job descriptions.
Okay.
But once you hire us, we take that money out of the AC21 fees.
Okay.
Okay. So I'll set that up for you, but I need to compare the two jobs. I don't really know if they are similar or not.
Okay, so similar description, everything is going to be similar. And if the title and everything is going to be similar. I need to know that, can I know the all the details, these details, once I'm going to contact by this contact details?
What we will need is the old job description, title, salary, and the new job description, title, salary.
Okay, and if I'm going to do that, even you're going to take care of the porting also, whether porting is done or not?
We can do everything for you. I have no problem with that. But, remind us what all needs to be done. We'll quote you a fees accordingly.
Yeah, that's I understand. But what papers do you need? Because usually the employer is not going to give...
I just need a copy of the labor certification.
Labor approved.
Labor certification, the EB2 labor certification. If if you can't get me a complete copy, get me at least the job description of the labor certification.
Okay, and also even if I got the labor certification and approved the certification and also the I-140...
I don't really need the I-140. I just need a copy of the labor certification.
Okay, so I think there is a 1-4 form, EA-1092 or 91 or something. What is that?
No, I think what you're thinking of is ETA-9089, which is the labor certification.
Yeah, 10?
I think it's ETA-9089.
9089. Yeah. Right. There, I think, is me. So that is fine for you, isn't it?
That's all I need. I just need a copy of the ETA-9089. We're good to go.
Okay, so I'm going to contact us through the whatever contact form you told me, and let me know so that I can go ahead and do that. So do you have any idea approximately how many days? Because my case is already, if it is, that is, porting is done, this date is already passed. So how can we determine approximately a year or 6 months it is going to take, or
for the porting of the date, or for the 45 approval?
So if it is porting is already done, 485 approval. 485 approval.
I can't tell you that, sir. I'll have to look at the case. I will have to have somebody call USCIS, see what's going on with the case. But is your priority date current right now?
Yes. It is already passed.
It is already passed. Yeah. Then we definitely need to step it up. Make sure we make several calls to the USCIS, and if necessary, either go through American Immigration Lawyers Association or you go through the Congressman's office to kind of nudge USCIS on working on your case.
Okay.
Hi.
Good luck to you. Go ahead, please.
I have a question about my 9th year H-1 extension.
I'm going to ask you to hold. You're a new question, right?
Oh, yeah.
What is your name? Just make up a name. What
my
is your name?
My name is Rajiv.
My name? Your name, same name? Okay, good. Rajiv is easy to remember. I should be able to remember that.
I'll wait for my chance.
Okay, folks, anybody has any questions who's posted already?
Yeah, Mr. Khanna.
Yes,
I have two questions. One is regarding what is the latest stage in the green card processing that my husband could add me to the green card process?
They can add you anytime they want. At the 45 stage, even after their 45 is in process. The reason I don't like waiting on this is because, let's say the priority date becomes current. He files for himself. A month later, priority date slips back again. You can't file 485. So I would suggest file 485 together.
I see. Okay, great. And also you answered this question regarding participation and competitions.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering whether you answered that in the context of F1 or H4.
F1.
F1. What happens if the person is on H4?
H4, definitely you can't take money from people.
I see. So, again, if it's allowed, then you could probably participate and then, you know, not take the award if you win.
Yes, you can forego the award. And But if you take and donate, I think you already violated your status.
Oh, I see. All right. Okay. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Rajiv. Hey, Rajiv.
Yes, sir. One by one, please. Go ahead.
Hi, Rajiv. This is question number 4.
Yes.
Actually,
sir.
I'm sorry. I missed your conversation call. You know, I joined lately.
Okay.
So, actually, I'm looking for 7th year extension on my H-1 visa.
Okay. Yeah, I have already answered this question, sir. Would you please listen to the recording? I don't want to repeat myself. Okay? I've already answered this question. Please listen to the recording. By the end of the day or by tomorrow, we should have it up, okay?
Okay, Rajiv. Thank you.
Good.
Rajiv, about question number 1.
Yes, sir. What is the question?
It was pretty straightforward about switching job. I'm currently on my OPT.
I already answered that question as well. And
yeah, I just wanted to make sure if I understood it correctly, sir.
Right, sir.
So, my employer is filing H-1 in April.
Right.
And I'm looking to switch jobs. So, what I understand is it all depends upon approval notice.
Right. And if the approval notice comes even in June or July, and before October you want to change employers again, you are protected.
Okay. And even before June, if I switch job before that, before June or July, then also if the quota has not expired, I can always put in another H-1, right?
Exactly. Two things will protect you. Either an approval or the quota still being around.
Got it. Okay. And there is no way that my current employer, say if I switch the job, there is no way my current employer can call up the lawyer and tell him to cancel my H-1 or anything, right?
Even if they cancel, you are not subject to the quota as far as I know.
Okay. And the fact that my OPT expires in June, that doesn't have anything to do with this, right?
It shouldn't have anything to do with this.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you, Ali.
Yeah. Next question, folks.
Hi, Rajiv. I had a question.
Is it a new question or a posted question?
Related to that.
Okay, hang on then. Give me a name, any name, ma'am, so I can call on you.
I'm Mani.
Mani. Okay. Folks, anybody else who has posted a question? Okay. Rajiv, you go ahead, please.
Sure. My question is about whether I should go in for my H-1 extension for the 9th year, which I'm in the 9th year, or should I continue with my should I jump over to my EAD? Keeping into mind this scenario that my company has like 1,000 employees, and out of which only two employees are on a H-1, so they are not really conversant with how H-1 works and all that stuff. And keeping into mind the current visits of Department of Labor,
That's not a problem. Look, as long as people are doing everything by the book, I don't care who comes and visits my premises.
Okay.
I'm fine with it. This has become a part of regular doing business. That's not a big deal. Don't let that deter you.
Okay.
Also, the fact that the company is reasonable size and that they are not heavily H-1B dependent actually only helps us. I like to keep H-1 alive as far as possible. I don't like to put all my eggs in one basket, which is the EAD. So if possible, and if not too much of a hassle, go ahead and apply for an H-1 9th-year extension.
And also, my wife, she's on an EAD already working, and she last time she left her H-4 go. So right now, can I also apply for H-4 for her or no?
Look, she can get an H-4 on a walk-in basis anytime at a consulate.
Okay.
And there is absolutely no reason for you to apply for H-4 for her and spend time and money on getting an H-4 transfer, which will not be given to her except through a visa stamping.
Okay.
So what is the point? She can get walk-in visa stamping anytime anyway.
Sure. So I'll continue with my EAD extensions also at the same time.
Yes, sir. Keep both options open. That would be my advice to you.
Thank you so much, Rajiv.
My pleasure. Mani, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Rajiv. Actually, I talked to the international office and they told me that if I don't cancel my I-140, it is possible that I could be returned at the port of entry. Is it true that if I have a valid F-1?
Ma'am, I don't know if... Look, let's dissect this problem differently. Now what you are saying makes more sense. Okay? If current pendency of the I-140 were a question, then definitely it is safer to withdraw it from a port of entry perspective. But as a practical matter, if you apply for a change of status, you withdraw the I-140, it has absolutely no effect on your approvability. Okay, so there's a slight advantage in withdrawing at the port of entry issues. But, you know, I'm not quite sure that that's really that big an issue anyway. Frankly, I don't know what your travel situation is. If you want to avoid the gray areas, don't travel as much as possible. But these are, at best, these are very, very gray areas of the law. Nobody can give you good advice simply because we don't know how CBP is going to react to it. There's nothing documented on this.
Okay. Oh, one more question. If I withdraw my I-140 and still do not get DF-1, can I again apply for I-140 with the same employer? And in that case, what happens to the priority date?
Remember, I-140 can be applied only during the life of labor certification. Labor cert is alive only for 180 days.
Then my employer will have to file another labor application.
Yes, ma'am. Everything might have to be started all over again. There are some exceptions here, but that's what I'm concerned about.
Okay.
You should have a detailed discussion with your lawyers, but I'm a little concerned about that part of the problem.
About filing the 140 again.
Right, because labor cert might be dead by that time. Of course, there is an exception that if you earlier filed it and you're refiling it, it might be permitted, but does it get permitted when you have withdrawn and refiled? I don't think so. I think you would have a problem refiling the I-140.
Okay. Can I go next month and get one F-1 stamping from Ottawa and come back on H-1?
If you come back on H-1 money, you'll be back on H-1. You will not be on F-1 anymore.
So what I'm saying is I have a valid F-1 stamp. I come back on H-1, then go outside the country and come back in August on F-1. It's technically
possible, but bear in mind that USCIS is supposed to, the consulate is supposed to cancel all existing stamps before they stamp any new stamp on your passport.
Oh.
So when you apply for an F-1, technically they should be canceling the H-1 visa stamp.
Okay.
You could say that I'm using the I-94 to re-enter USA and play it that way, but this is a very, 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 very tough call. I'm very hesitant to say that, you know, it's going to work or not going to work. Very, very difficult for me to say.
Okay. Just one last question, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to H-1 when I go for F-1 stamping? Like, if they reject my F-1, do they just give me my, can I just take my
passport? You know, if they have not canceled it.
But do they cancel it if they don't?
They are supposed to. They are supposed to, but many times they don't.
Okay. So, it's case-to-case basis. It could be canceled.
No, they are supposed to, but many times they don't.
Okay. Even if they reject the F-1, they're supposed to cancel the H-1?
They're supposed to cancel it, and then you can always reapply for the H-1. But you know, as well as I do, reapplying for the H-1 is like applying for a new H-1 stamp. They could take forever.
Okay. They could take forever. Just one final thing. If I apply for COS and get the COS, is it easier to get the F-1 stamp or like same...
No, ma'am. I think it does not make it necessarily easier.
Same case. Okay.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Folks, anybody else has a question? *6, if you have a question. All right, well, very good. Thank you for being here. I appreciate your time, and I will talk with you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.
Hi, Rajiv.
Yep.
Hi, Rajiv. Sorry. I have a question. I need your advice on something. I was on H-1 beginning January 1st of 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Been on H-1 for all this time. I would like to know what's the best time to file a labor. I know you need to do it before 12 months of your H-1
Exactly. File as early as possible.
And, okay, well, my current employer would probably not do it. And my thing is that my date is current. I have my MS from U.S. and country of chargeability is current and it's expected to be current. So I was thinking of this because I have a job offer from another company, but I don't want to join them until, you know, because then again, if I join them and they don't do my labor, then again.
That's perfectly, if you want to apply to a future employer that you intend to join later, no problem. That can be done.
Some people say that if you do that, the chances of the labor getting audited is like really high.
I really don't care about that. As long as the law permits me to do it, I frankly have not seen a pattern that says future employers are being audited more than, because we do it all the time as well. I have not seen any such pattern, but I could be wrong. Things keep changing from time to time. I don't think it should make a difference. And in any case, the advantages should outweigh because you need the H-1 extensions also, you see. And the only way you can get H-1 extensions is through filing a labor certification.
And this labor certification necessarily does not have to be with the current employer, right?
It does not have to.
Oh, okay. And one more thing. This country of chargeability is actually the country of birth, right? It's not the country of citizenship.
That is correct. It is the country of birth.
Okay. I guess that's it. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Right.
Folks, anybody else left over?
Yes, Rajiv, one more question.
Mani, you're going to have to hold 1 second. Anybody else, folks? Mani, go ahead.
Seeing that there are so many moving parts, COS cancelling, the I-140 not cancelling, if you were in my situation or if you had to give the best suggestion, what would you do? I mean,
I would want to go to school on H-1 visa. Do my work part-time and go to school full-time because H-1 permits you to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck.
Okay.
Bye-bye.